Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of The Buffalo Beat. Thank you all for joining us here on the Athletic Podcast Network. We are speaking with you a bit quicker than normally. That's because of the Tuesday game and the shortened schedule in between games. But we are here to preview the Bills' upcoming game against the Kansas City Chiefs, a game in which a couple of 4-1 teams coming off losses will be in action with two dynamic offenses. It's going to be a lot of fun, and we'll certainly get into the matchup more as we go along. But we also wanted to discuss some of the dysfunction with the defense, specifically with what happened against the Titans after really both of us have taken a good hard look at what actually happened between the Bills and Titans and whether or not there are some fixable things moving forward. So with me, as always, is my podcast partner, Matthew Fairburn, and you can read all of our stuff over at The Athletic and go to theathletic.com/thebuffalobeat for a nice little subscription offer for you with some decreased prices. But Matthew Fairburn, I think defense has still been the hot topic throughout the entire week, if you want to call it a week, throughout the entire last 3 days after the Titans game, where Bills fans are still hot about it, and they want to place blame somewhere. And a lot of it is falling on a few different elements. You know, Taron Johnson rightfully taking a lot of heat for getting beat in coverage. Tremaine Edmonds is getting a lot of heat, and I wanted to talk about him as well. The pass rush also getting a lot of heat in this game, and I think the thing that maybe stands out above all else is what Sean McDermott had to say about the pass rush after the game.
Yeah, he, you know, made a point, which he doesn't always do, but he will occasionally, you know, take the time or make the effort to send a message of some sort. And he talked right after the game about not getting pressure with the front four, with only four players. And I think when you look at the issues that they're having on defense, especially on Tuesday, without Matt Milano, without Tre'Davious White, no Levi Wallace, you know, beat up at cornerback, missing their top cover linebacker, you need your, if you're going to be able to scheme around that, one of the ways you do it is by getting pressure with the front four. That frees you up to do a lot of different things. And if you can't do that, then you're going to have some trouble. And I think that's where some of the issues start, because the front four has been pretty healthy overall. I know Harrison Phillips is coming off a torn ACL. Vernon Butler was a little nicked up heading into the season. Ed Oliver had, you know, the knee, so he's been playing, but maybe not quite at 100%. But that's all minor stuff compared to missing Tre'Davious White or Matt Milano for entire games. So I don't think there's a lot of built-in excuses from an injury standpoint. And they invested money in this group. You know, they let Jordan Phillips walk. They let Shaq Lawson walk, but they replaced those guys with Quentin Jefferson, Mario Addison, Vernon Butler. They drafted AJ Epenesa in the second round. You know, I get that it was a short, no preseason, short training camp, but you draft a guy in the second round and you're having this much problem, this much of a problem getting after the quarterback, you'd hope that at least situationally he'd be able to help out, and that hasn't really been the case. So,
yeah, he can't even get on the field right now.
Right, and even when he's on there, I know he had a sack against the Rams, but it was more of a hustle sack. You know, he chased down Goff as he was scrambling away. He's not overpowering at the point of attack the way you would hope a second-round pick would be. It's early. He's got time to develop. You know, certainly a strange offseason for him. But overall, nobody on that front four is really living up to who they are, outside of maybe Jerry Hughes. Who I think is still, but he still has the same problem that he's had over the last few years, which is he can be the focal point for opposing teams' offenses because they don't necessarily have, the dominant guy across from him. I think Mario Addison has been decent, but on the whole, there's probably a variety of factors that go into it, whether it's learning to play with one another, individuals having, tough performances here and there. But the group as a whole just hasn't been good enough, and that has a trickle down effect. Whether, you know, sometimes these things are intertwined. If you get better coverage, you'll get more sacks, and it's not really about the sack numbers so much as it is impacting the quarterback, and they're not doing that at a very high clip right now. They're down near the bottom of the league, depending on which metric you want to use, but by most, you know, in terms of pressure and hurries, these are ambiguous stats. Sometimes, you know, they're different depending on where you look. Everybody's going to define a pressure differently, so it's tougher to pinpoint stats on that side of the ball than it is on offense. But I think any way you slice it, they're not getting to the quarterback as frequently as they would like, and that makes it harder on the back end. You know, when they're shorthanded, frankly, in the secondary, and it's why they've, you know, they're already 2/3 of the way to allowing as many passing touchdowns as they did last season.
I'm glad you brought up Hughes and him actually living up to it, because I think this is a massive misunderstanding with some out there that believe that he is not being a good player for this team this year. You know, I can only sit there and you know, talk with people or respond to people and say, look, Hughes is actually having a good season, and they'll be like, well, where's the sacks? Where is he affecting the game? Why aren't they getting pressure on the quarterback? Hughes is a non-factor. That is, I can only just say that he's having a good season without backing up with stats for so long. So with the All 22 review that we'll be posting today, we're taping on Friday around 10 a.m., I dug big time into Hughes and what he did against the Titans, because I was curious, because obviously you remember the game and you think to yourself, okay, the pass rush really just did not get there well enough. And that's absolutely accurate for everyone except for Jerry Hughes. Now, let me just go through and give you some raw statistics here. I went back and I tracked pressures per player. And everyone has a different definition of a pressure, but my definition is when you beat your assignment, get into the backfield, and either bring on a sack, a quickened throw, or moving the quarterback off his spot. To me, that is a pressure. So from that perspective, when watching Jerry Hughes, actually, you know, in terms of how often other players win their pass rushing attempts, dominated against Taylor Lewan, Dennis Kelly, and Ty Sambrylo, the three tackles he went up against, he had a total of 22 pass rush snaps throughout the game. Of those 22 pass rush snaps, two of which he was double teamed. Another one was a play action rollout to the opposite side where he actually defended the run correctly. So if you adjust it, it comes down to 19 pass rush snaps where he had a one-on-one opportunity. On those 19 pass rush snaps, he applied a pressure 9 times, which is a 47% pressure percentage. And if you look at pass rush win rates throughout the NFL, the highest pass rush win rate, according to ESPN's analytics, has been TJ Watt at 34% through the first 5 weeks. So Hughes, even if you don't do the adjusted, on 22 pass rush snaps, had almost 41% of a pressure percentage in that game. He is so far and away not the problem. And just to even further exemplify how not the problem he is, of those 9 pressures, his average time of getting to the quarterback to either throw the ball or move off his spot, 2.27 seconds, which is ridiculous for pass rushers. So I get everyone's frustrated with the pass rush, and we're going to get into the other issues, but Hughes is not it. Hughes is a strength. He's one of the best pass rushers in the NFL right now. By the way, that pass rush win rate that I was talking about, second overall through 5 weeks before that Tuesday game, Jerry Hughes, who's at 33% for the season. I mean, the guy is playing out of his mind right now. He just doesn't have any help beside him. And that's, I think, where the Bills are really looking into things. They need more from Ed Oliver, who hasn't been the same since his knee injury against Miami. They need more from Quentin Jefferson, who has provided flashes but hasn't been there in totality. Mario Addison had a bad game against the Titans from a pass rushing perspective, but has mostly been okay. Trent Murphy, a complete non-factor as a pass rusher, especially against the Titans. 13 pass rush snaps, zero pressures. So combined, outside of Hughes, the eight other defensive linemen combined for 5 pressures. Hughes had 9 by himself. We need to stop with the Hughes hate. He is one of the solutions, not the problem.
I'm going to put Jerry Hughes on your tombstone somewhere because I feel like you are the number one Jerry Hughes defender
for years. Of course, because he's good.
Because too often sack numbers are used as the end-all be-all. And in some cases, it's like this is, you know, something that is, you know, identifying pass rush issues and things like that is a little bit more complicated than other things. And you do have to bring the quarterback down. Like we've seen, it depends on who you're playing, right? Like whoever's getting all the pressures against the Bills, good for them because they're having a hard time bringing Josh Allen down. You know, like Aaron Donald was impressive for the way he was able to actually hold on to him when he wrapped him up and bring him down. Now, certainly moving Josh Allen off his spot and all these things, some quarterbacks are better. But the thing about Tannehill is that he's probably the most athletic quarterback they've faced this season. Sam Darnold can move, but Tannehill is the most mobile. And Jerry Hughes did admit to losing contain a few times, but I think that was more of a frustration thing of not being able to, like you said, not having a ton of help and getting back there often, but not being able to hit him or bring him down. You know, that's going to get to you, especially when you're losing as badly as they were losing. And I think that's where, you know, they definitely lost contain on Tannehill a few times. And, you know, pass rushing is more of a chemistry thing sometimes when you
Absolutely.
Do it as a team. And there's probably some of that missing from this group. You know, you don't have... I mean, think about when they were, you know, at their, I mean, the best they've been rushing the passer, really, I don't think they've gotten back to 2014 levels since then. And those were guys that played together, certainly super talented. But even when Kyle Williams and Jerry Hughes were together, they didn't have to really think, as much as, you know, all these new pieces at once. So there's an element of that. I also think when we talked about the pass rush before the season, we mentioned, you know, that they would have some new pieces and the combinations they would be able to use. You know, those certainly take time to come together. But we also said that if the pass rush was going to take the next step, Ed Oliver was going to have to be the one to jump into that top tier of pass rusher and be a guy that can take over games. And he's been too inconsistent. You know, he has his moments, but even Leslie Frazier said this week that he, you know, hasn't gotten back to where he was at the end of last season. And that some of that might be the knee injury he's playing through.
I think it is, actually.
But, you know, and Frazier mentioned that as well. But whatever the reason, you're not getting enough from him. You're not getting enough from a lot of these guys outside of probably Hughes. And I think Addison has been pretty decent at times as well.
He's a really good run defender too.
And he's not, again, Addison. You sign a guy like Addison and it's not like you signed Clowney. You know, he's a little bit older.
Right.
He's always been good in run defense. He's been an effective pass rusher, but I don't think you're kidding yourself that you signed a guy in his prime that's one of the premier pass rushers. And that's really the one position they haven't had a chance to address in a meaningful way. I guess they've had chances to address it. They just haven't. Since they got here. And, you know, Addison's probably the most significant addition in that way, you know, at that position that they've made since Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean arrived. And they also invested a second round pick in the position. So that's where there's, I think, some level of of disappointment. They've tried these moves that haven't yielded incredible results. They invested in Ed Oliver, a top 10 pick, not an edge rusher, but a guy that's supposed to rush the passer. They signed Trent Murphy. They signed Mario Addison. They drafted AJ Epenesa. And for the most part, it's still a guy that they inherited who's, you know, creating most of the problem, or creating most of the problems for opposing offenses, being Jerry Hughes. So hey, I think there's a lot of elements going into it. And I wouldn't say Jerry Hughes should be at the top of people's lists. Among other, I mean, we talk about these stats being a little ambiguous, and you know, it depends who you're, who's calling what a pressure and whatever. But you can basically go across the board. You know, you're talking about what you tracked. ESPN has him in their pass rush win rate very high. He's the seventh highest graded edge rusher from a pass rush perspective on Pro Football Focus, eighth overall. So he's, by most measures that you look at, he's playing well. He's not the problem. He's not, you know, racking up sacks at a crazy rate, but I think there's other issues across the defensive line, and it's got to be disappointing and frustrating, because you can't go into this game against the Kansas City Chiefs and be like, well, if we're going to get pressure, I guess we just got to blitz them. You know, like, you don't want to really blitz Patrick Mahomes. You could try, but again, he's a guy that can move off his spot, throw off platform. It's just a dangerous game to play when Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill and, you know, all these other weapons.
Mecole Hardman.
Yeah. Even, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire out of the backfield. There's too many guys that can create big plays. They'll probably be without Sammy Watkins, but, you know, they're – blitzing Patrick Mahomes doesn't seem like it will be the answer.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of different things with this defensive line that I want to get to from, and you know, I know we only have so much time, but when I would think the major point here is Ed Oliver, and there's no doubt the last 3 weeks he has not been the same as a pass rusher. The second half of last season and the first 2 weeks of this season, I thought Oliver, again, was one of the best defenders on the field, like he was in the second half of the season last year. Now, that knee injury where he tried to leg whip a guy for a tackle, and it ended up going poorly for him, and having to miss a practice, and having to be limited the week after, ahead of the Rams game, I don't think it's a coincidence that Oliver had one of his worst outings since the first half of his rookie season against the Rams. The same deal against the Titans. I think there's probably a bit of that going on where he can't actually be as explosive as he always is. And his first pressure didn't come until the third quarter. His only pressure, I should say, didn't come until the third quarter against the Titans. And that's just not the guy that I watched last year or even early on this season. So you don't want to make excuses because the guy is out there, they're putting him out there and everything along those lines. But it would be a little foolish to not admit that it could be an issue, considering that a lot of his explosiveness stems from the lower half. And if one of his knees isn't firing on full capacity, then odds are then he's going to be a little bit muted as to what he was. So if he gets healthier, I think fans should be optimistic that he can have the return to form, but he's not there right now. And that's an issue. Jefferson is another guy that they need more out of him. There's so many flashes from him, but it's so maddeningly inconsistent that it makes it so it's either all or nothing with him, where he's either getting blown off the ball or he's getting into the backfield and almost getting a sack. And on that combined pressure that I talked about between Oliver and Jefferson, they were about to force the Titans into taking a field goal, but then Jefferson took a roughing the passer call and extended the drive, and the Titans obviously wound up getting their fourth touchdown. So those two guys, I think, are the key here for the Bills' pass rush to get back on track. You know, because Hughes is going to continue to win. He's basically matchup proof at this point against offensive tackles around the league. Like, nobody seems to have an answer for this guy. Of course, not getting the sacks, and I know that frustrates some people, but the pressures are there. The opportunities are there. But what he also needs are his teammates to live up to their end of the bargain. And the best way to do that is to have one of your interior defenders, whether it be Oliver or Jefferson, win their one-on-one and get into the backfield. So that way there are no escape valves. There isn't an opportunity for the quarterback to step into the pocket and, you know, sidestep the wide rusher, or, you know, that they won't be able to complete a pass quickly, which is what happened a lot of times when Hughes got the pressure. Tannehill was able to find a target quickly, and Tannehill had a great game. You know, you also have to tip your cap to him because he was really cool under pressure, always knew where his target was, and really this problem was a bit of a metamorphosis of three different factors. One, nobody besides Hughes was putting pressure on the quarterback. Two, Tannehill was very efficient, effective at finding those underneath targets to extend the drives and get something out of the down rather than taking a negative play or an incompletion. And three, the secondary couldn't cover anybody against the Titans. So when you have those three things going at once, and by the way, Tannehill was getting out the ball really quickly all game. I think he averaged 2.63 seconds per pass play in time to decision. So all of these different elements line up to where the Bills need more out of a couple of elements, and the one that can impact the rest is if the interior pass rushers can get home. So that's where the number one area that they have to improve moving forward.
Yeah, they're not going to be able to, as I alluded to, blitz Patrick Mahomes. He's 28 for 40 for 391 yards and three touchdowns when blitzed this season, according to Sport Radar data. That gives him the fourth highest passer rating of any quarterback who's been blitzed at least 30 times. And he's not being blitzed nearly as often as other quarterbacks. That's 40 attempts against the blitz. And by comparison, Josh Allen's been blitzed 59 times. So a good chunk more. And Josh Allen's been pretty good against the blitz as well. Six touchdowns, no interceptions. But it's not really the answer to beating these guys unless you can time it properly and, really get home with four guys who are going to not only get there, but bring the guy down, because Patrick Mahomes has not been sacked against the blitz this year. So it's going to be tough to scheme that up. I mean, he's hard enough to face on his own. It's a different challenge for sure than Ryan Tannehill is, because I think, like Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes is one of those quarterbacks who takes a while to throw the ball. Because he's letting plays develop, he's buying time. If you're looking at average time to throw on NFL Next Gen stats, Patrick Mahomes is the seventh highest at 2.94 seconds on average. Josh Allen's up over 3 seconds.
I was going to say that's usually his MO.
Baker Mayfield leads the league with 3.19. Russell Wilson, Lamar Jackson are up there. And Tannehill is down near the bottom third at 2.7. And it doesn't seem like a lot. It's, 0.25 seconds longer for Patrick Mahomes on average. But that's a significant difference when you factor in some of the longer throws that he'll, or some of the longer time that he'll spend behind the line of scrimmage. I mean, I always like to filter quarterback stats by, like, if it took them longer than 3 seconds or something to throw, because that's usually about, if you count when a guy is back there. Anybody who watches the Bills knows that Josh Allen is very much this kind of quarterback who will stand back there and kind of let the scramble drill take over a little bit. And that's Patrick Mahomes too. Like, on throws where it takes at least 3 seconds to throw the ball, Josh Allen has the most attempts in the entire NFL with 85. 935 of his passing yards have come when it takes at least 3 seconds to throw the ball. Eight touchdowns, two interceptions. Patrick Mahomes has 67 attempts, 554 of his yards, four touchdowns, and an interception. So they have a quick game in Kansas City, but they also have this element of the offense where he'll get back mm-hmm. there and buy some time and make the subtle movements. He's not a great runner, but he's enough of a runner. And, you know, if you're going to get into the backfield, you need to bring him down. And it's not easy to do. And he can be frustrating because he can throw the ball from all sorts of different weird platforms. And it's they need Tre'Davious White back. Be a huge bonus if they could get Matt Milano back as well, because that changes what they can do scheme-wise. Otherwise, they need somebody to step up on the front four.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's get into this Bills-Chiefs matchup, because I don't think it's really a question of if these two teams will score points. I mean, the over-under on this game last time I checked was 57.5. That's probably light for what it has the potential of becoming. And you look at what both these teams are able to do on a weekly basis offensively. Their passing attacks are just great every single week. So I don't think it's a matter of if there will be points in this game. I think it's just a matter of how to limit some of these touchdown drives into becoming field goal drives instead. And since we cover the Bills, we have to look at it from a Bills perspective, because when you look at where they really struggled against the Titans, we outlined all of these different areas. The pass rush, the secondary was kind of a mess. The linebacker play hasn't been the greatest, even though I will say Tremaine Edmonds, I thought he looked as good as he has since coming back from his shoulder injury. But he seems to be trending in the right direction from that capacity. And he'll especially be going in the right direction if he gets Matt Milano back, like you alluded to earlier. So what can the Bills do against the Chiefs? What changes can they effectively make that are not so drastic that they're completely changing their identity? Honestly, when I looked at what they did against the Titans, and in keeping the Chiefs in mind, there are a few different ideas that kind of popped into my head. The first, I would maximize Jerry Hughes, and this is the Jerry Hughes episode. I would maximize Jerry Hughes' snaps and keep him on the field as much as they're comfortable with keeping him on the field. 75, 80, 85% of snaps, just go do it. Anytime there's an obvious rundown, take him off, put Trent Murphy on the field. Doesn't matter. You want Hughes on the field for all of your pass rushing snaps, because you need to be able to get home more effectively against Mahomes and cause a little helter-skelter back there with your front four. And certainly some stunts between Mario Addison and Quentin Jefferson, or Addison and Ed Oliver, can help. But I think if you go into this game with giving Hughes and Addison the majority of the large majority of your defensive end snaps, I think you're probably starting off at the right spot. Secondly, I would get Taron Johnson off the field. Through week five, he has become a liability for this defense. When they blitz and the Bills are in man-to-man, he can't cover the guy. He hesitates too long, loses on the route, allows the receiver to get separation, and then that's all they need. There are too many examples of it against the Titans. There have been so many examples of it throughout the season. He's just not there right now where they need him to be. So if it were me, I would put Cam Lewis on the field for him, as long as Tre'Davious White can play in this Chiefs game. And then thirdly, I would get back to what they do best, which is zone coverage. I mean, we've seen the Bills blitz and be in man. I don't have the exact percentages, but it feels like they've been in man a lot more than they have in the past. And against the Chiefs specifically, the zone coverage, I think, is the way that they need to go about this thing, because, you know, Mahomes is going to pick you apart. They have such quick receivers that man-to-man coverage, even if they have Tre'Davious White, White can't hang with Tyreek Hill throughout 4, 5, 6 seconds on a play. Hill is just too fast, too elusive. So I would get back to zone coverage and try and make the Chiefs beat you that way and create some opportunities for some confusion in that way. So there's a lot of ideas there, but I do think they should try those in-house ideas before overreacting and trying to do something out of house, because they still have pieces that are good from previous years. They just need to iron things out, and the Chiefs game isn't an ideal way to go about it, but you know, at least they know they have a baseline of something to impress upon from previous years.
Yeah, I still don't think it's an unfixable problem on defense.
Same.
The numbers have been really bad for this group, and there's been some pretty ugly defensive or individual defensive performances that have caused, I think, a lot of the breakdowns. They seemed all over the place against the Titans, not really doing a good job of staying within themselves individually and sort of playing their assignments. You don't remember what that looks like until you see it. And it's not something that we're used to from this defense. From a coaching standpoint, they usually have those guys pretty well prepared and, you know, well coached up, and they just didn't look, they looked out of sorts. And part of that's probably having two of your best players on the sideline and your leader in the middle banged up playing through pain. But there was just guys trying to do too much too often, and they still have a lot of the ingredients that made this a pretty good defense over the last couple of years. And I've always, this, the weird part about this matchup to me is that we haven't seen them play against Patrick Mahomes since Sean McDermott has been here. And I've always thought they'd have pretty good luck against the Chiefs, or better than most teams, because they are good at coming up with a plan and coming up with, you know, playing really sound assignment football and limiting big plays when they're playing well. Now that the defense isn't playing well, it's a little bit harder to pinpoint this matchup, because I've always thought their scheme and their players matched up pretty well with what the Chiefs do, and that they'd have a chance to slow them down. I still think they have a shot to do it, but it needs to be a real quick turnaround from what we saw on Tuesday. And, you know, I think it's a short-ish week, but I don't think there's going to be the same lack of focus or urgency, whatever you want to call it, on the defensive side of the ball. I think they're going to be a lot more ready for this one. They're not traveling. There's no COVID implications in this game as of yet, knock on wood. So they know, you know, the game is happening. They know it's happening in their stadium at 5 o'clock on Monday. I think the variables are fewer in this game, and I think they'll be okay. I don't think, my gut is telling me that, you know, this idea of like, oh man, the defense is a mess and Patrick Mahomes is coming here, he's going to put up 70. You know, I think he's going to get his points. He always does. And there's going to be big plays, because that's the way the NFL seems to be these days, is, you know, geared towards offense. But I don't think it's going to be as bad as people think. Man, that's more of a, some of it's a gut feeling, and some of it is just seeing how they match up. Mm-hmm. It depends who's healthy, too. If Matt Milano's healthy, that changes how you can play against Travis Kelce, and all of a sudden you're a completely different defense, and it's a completely different matchup.
Yeah, 100%. Milano and Tre'Davious White would be huge for this game, and both got in a limited practice on Thursday. We're recording this before Friday's practice, so we'll see there. But, you know, I would be encouraged if I were Bills fans about the potential availability of both of those guys. But I think the one thing that the Bills have going for them is that they're going to be pissed off based on what happened against Tennessee. I mean, I do think, and you alluded to this in both your story and in the post-game podcast, that the point total, a lot of it had to do with shortened fields. Now, the Bills defense, they couldn't get off the field on third downs, which added to the problem. But it's not as though the Titans just blew them away with yards. The Bills were actually really good against running backs against the Titans, outside of a couple of bigger runs, one of which to Derrick Henry. But I mean, they average right around 3 yards a carry. Seemed like they were filling in well. That's, like I said, Edmonds looked like he was playing better. So they've got that going for them, at least. And now it's the pass defense that needs to get there. And this defensive line is going to be really pissed off, especially that both Sean McDermott was openly criticizing about them not getting there with their front four. And secondly, they have eyes. Most of them have Twitter. They can see when fans are ticked off about the pass rush. Odds are they're going to be tagged in some stuff, which I am not a fan of snitch tagging, by the way, but that's neither here nor there. All these things will factor into their mentality, and I don't know that this Bills group is the one that goes, oh, shucks, they're right. I'm really struggling and get down on themselves. That's not how they've operated ever before. And so I would anticipate that we're going to see a big time rejuvenation, at least from just how ticked they are about the whole thing. And I don't know if it's going to translate into holding the Chiefs to 20 points or something like that. I don't know if you can hold Mahomes to 20 points, especially in a year like this one where everyone's scoring points, but I do expect them to have a bit more success than we have seen previously as a pass defense, with, as long as they make some necessary changes. And like you said, if they get Milano and White back, then that completely changes things. Maybe not to the tune of stopping them, like I alluded to 20 points, but still, nonetheless, being able to operate more efficiently, getting off the field, and really making the Chiefs earn it, as opposed to just being a complete pushover.
Yeah, it's never as bad as it looks, and it's never as good as it looks. And that doesn't play well on Twitter, or, you know, when you're dealing with emotions as fans and some media.
I mean, it's to be expected, though.
It is, yeah. You let up 42 points, you're going to think the sky is falling. But it really is week to week. And that's why, you know, early on in the season when it's like, hey, you know, Josh Allen just threw 4 touchdowns and 400 yards, it's like people want him to be the MVP. And it's like, all right, let's let the season play out. Let's see how, you know, he matches up against different kinds of defenses. And, you know, I think he's been able to sustain for the most part. But I think much like he wasn't going to throw for 404 every week, the defense isn't going to let up 42 every week. Now, they've let up more than you'd like, and they've had stretches of games that have been particularly ugly. But the short fields they got put them kind of in an uphill battle, you know, on Tuesday. I keep wanting to say Sunday. On Tuesday, they had so many short fields, and it's really a lack of big plays. And that's where, you know, when we talk about this pass rush and we talk about, I think there's some frustration setting in. That I think that's where some of that, you know, lack of sound assignment football came into play. They just didn't look ready on Tuesday, and they got routed. I mean, it's reason for concern that can still happen to this defense, that they can look that unprepared, and that the, you know, the sound coaching that you might expect on that side of the ball might not be a weekly occurrence, and that certain matchups are going to give them that problem. All that I understand. I just don't – I think usually you can – you know, good rule of thumb is that it's not as bad as it looks, and it's never as good as it looks either. And you just have to find that middle ground and hit the reset button every week, because every week, every matchup is different. They could shut down Patrick Mahomes and, you know, the Jets in back-to-back weeks and get lit up by the Patriots because it's a different-looking offense. It's – that's the weird thing about the NFL. And, you know, I think what happened on Tuesday doesn't necessarily make me think too much differently about what could happen on Monday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree there. All right, let's get to predictions for this upcoming game, because it has all the potential to be the most fun regular season game of the year. Especially because you've got, for the Bills anyway, because you've got the best quarterback in the league in Patrick Mahomes. You have one of the up-and-coming quarterbacks in Josh Allen, who has gotten off to an incredibly good start. Two passing offenses that are really humming right now, and two defenses that have allowed a lot of points. So if you like defense, probably not the week for you. But if you like offense, which most people do, then this one could be a real humdinger. So the Chiefs are favored by 4 points, the last I saw. The over-under, 57.5, the last I saw, which was, I think, last night sometime. Matthew Fairburn, who do you have, why, and who covers the spread?
I've got a weird combination this week. I'm going with the under for starters. It's a really high number, and you could see them hitting that, but it basically requires both teams to get to 30 or one team to get well above 30. I'm taking the under just because it's a high number, a really high number that, you know, things have to really get rolling for that one to hit. Maybe it does, but we haven't seen an over under that high in a Bills game in a long time. I've got the Chiefs winning, but I have the Bills covering the spread, and the spread I saw was 4.5 in some spots.
4.5. Okay.
I don't know if it got bet back down. It started at 2.5 or 3.5 and got bet up to 4.5. There was something like 70% of the money on Kansas City. I think the Bills cover the spread. I think the Chiefs win the game. The 4.5 points I like taking with the home team. And like I said, I think the Bills defense will get back on track somewhat. I think the offense shouldn't have a ton of trouble, although Steve Spagnuolo, it's a interesting defense on Kansas City. They've given up some big plays, but they've also had some really good games. They did really well against Lamar Jackson, and you know, they've been a tough defense at times. It's a guessing game a little bit with that group, but yeah, so you know, something like 30-27 would really it would be by the slimmest of margins hitting the under, and the Bills would cover the spread. And the 4.5 I think is key. 4 is a little bit different. I know it's half a point, but many games are decided by 3 or 4 points. 5 is different. So for all of you bettors out there.
Yeah. I'm looking at the DraftKings Sportsbook figures right now, and they've got it at 4 currently, which you would still be hitting the Bills covering anyway with the 30-27 score, and the over-under is 57.5. So yeah. So you would be safe with the under and Bills covering. All right. I think this matchup is fascinating. The Chiefs defensively and the Bills defensively both have kind of the same thing going for them. The Bills have turned in two really good run-stopping performances in a row here, and it makes me think that maybe they figured things out a little bit there. And the Chiefs are a good run-stuffing unit. The problems here for both of these teams is through the air. And the Chiefs, they switch it up a little bit more than the Bills do. They'll go from man-to-man coverage to zone coverage, and they like to keep the quarterback guessing. But because the Titans had so much success in zone coverage against the Bills and Josh Allen, or at least relative success, because Allen was still able to put up some yards and some touchdowns, I wonder if maybe the Chiefs go with that blueprint and try to go full on zone against the Bills and try and defend them maybe a lot in the same ways that other teams defend their quarterback, Patrick Mahomes. So I'll be very intrigued by that. But if the Bills find themselves against a man-to-man matchup with a single high safety, their free safety, Juan Thornhill, he has a tendency to drift if you look a certain way. And so I think there could be some opportunities for some double moves on the backside with one of John Brown or Stephon Diggs to get down the field. The other element to this is Tyrann Mathieu, who does not have a tight end to focus on with the Bills because Dawson Knox has been a non-factor. Tyler Croft has been a non-factor. So I wonder if they use Mathieu to either on a delay blitz of Josh Allen or to bracket Stephon Diggs to take away Allen's security blanket of the season. So that's kind of a chess game right there that you'll see when the Bills offense is on the field versus the Chiefs defense. But in terms of the all-out game, I think there's just one element to the Chiefs offense that I just don't know that the Bills have an answer for, and that's Tyreek Hill. I mean, the speed is insane. He lines up everywhere. Nickel corner has been a constant problem for the Bills this season. And even if they replace Taron Johnson with Cam Lewis, that's still an undrafted player from last year going up against Tyreek Hill. And that's best case scenario, because you would think Tre'Davious White is in the game at that point. But if White doesn't play, then you'll probably have Cam Lewis on the outside again, Taron Johnson on the inside. I would just keep Tyreek Hill in the slot all game long and just absolutely, I mean, he can find the weak areas in the zone. I think this is monster game potential for Tyreek Hill. And of course, they have that Travis Kelce guy too, who's no slouch himself and has been setting the pace from a receiving perspective for tight ends this year. So because of that factor, I like the Chiefs in this game. I like the over in this game. And I will take the Chiefs to cover the spread with a final score of 37-29 over the Bills. You'll get your points. This will be a fun matchup, and I don't think it's going to be one where people are like, look, Allen just got totally outclassed by Mahomes. I think Allen's going to have some success, and it's going to breed some optimism based on him going toe-to-toe with Mahomes. But at the end of the day, the Chiefs just have too much, and the Bills' defense and their secondary, they just have a clear weakness, and the Chiefs have the clear matchup to exploit in that. So I'm taking the Chiefs 37-29.
Yeah, it's hard to pick the Bills, but I think you can see the path to victory on one side of the ball, but it's a little bit harder to envision a complete wire-to-wire shutdown of Patrick Mahomes. It just, not mm-hmm. many teams have been able to do it. He's not perfect. He's not, you know, Superman or anything, but he's pretty damn good, and he's got a lot of talented players around him. And, you know, Andy Reid is a tough match as a play caller. He knows how to adjust and find the weaknesses in an opposing defense. So that's why I'm a little hesitant to pick the Bills, even though I have them to cover. It's a hard team to stop for four quarters. And given the lapses we've mm-hmm. seen from this defense, like you said, there's just some pieces that they don't really have an answer for.
Mm-hmm. And even if they were to have Tre'Davious White shadow Tyreek Hill, by the way, White doesn't have the long speed to keep up with Hill. So that even White, I think, would struggle in that matchup. So I just don't know what they're going to do with Tyreek Hill. I really don't. All right. And if you're into the over-under betting and you're curious about the weather, supposed to only be a slight breeze at 5 miles an hour, no wind or anything, no wind or rain expected, and a 55 degree night. So yeah, giddy up for points, everyone, on a Monday night. Okay, Matthew Fairburn, any fond words of farewell before we bid adieu to our listeners?
I've got nothing, but you know, hopefully this is a game that can live up to the hype for people. It's got moved off Thursday night, but still a prime time affair. Unfortunately, no fans in the stands. You know, I'm sure people are bummed to be missing it, but I think it'll still get that prime time treatment, and hopefully it gets people a little bit. It seems like the air has come out of the balloon a little bit on the Bills, and maybe this will get people fired up again.
Yeah. Also, shout out to two Monday night football games, which I could get used to this. It's a lot of fun having those back to back, and I'm sure it's a lot more fun for players to play on a Monday night than it is on a Thursday. I think that would be a prevailing thought throughout the league. Anyway, all right,
and that'll be better than a Tuesday.
Most certainly better than a Tuesday. I can't handle a Tuesday personally. This week has been so truncated because they play it on a Tuesday, practice are on a Thursday, the film came out, had to watch both the Titans Bills film and the Chiefs Raiders film from this past week all yesterday, and trying to write journalist problems. But Tuesday games, no fun. Let's get them out of the question here. Okay. That'll do it for us. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode of The Buffalo Beat. And again, if you have yet to subscribe to The Athletic, you can do so right now for a reduced fee if you go to theathletic.com/thebuffalobeat. Again, that's theathletic.com patreon.com/thebuffalobeat. You can read all of the items that both Matthew Fairburn and I post. Same thing with our buddy Tim Graham. John Vogel is knee deep in Sabres offseason stuff, so there's plenty to do there, especially after they just picked up Taylor Hall, which is kind of cool. And even if you're interested in non-Buffalo teams, you like, let's say you like the Philadelphia 76ers, plenty there. NBA draft stuff, NFL draft stuff. Dane Brugler's still cooking. Premier League is going early on in the season. In the UK. So a lot of things that we cover that you get all for one low price. So go to theathletic.com/thebuffalobeat right now. Okay, thanks so much for listening. So for Matthew Fairburn, I'm Joe Biscaglia, and we will talk to you after the game on Monday. See you then.